Right. I'm Therissa. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm grateful to be here. There are a couple of ways for me to manage myself around something like this. One of them is to pray, and I assure you a fair amount of praying was going on over there over the last 15 minutes. The second thing is to have someone who holds up cards with numbers that tell me how much time I have left, and I know that's in place. Thank you for letting me know who the person is who's doing that. And the third one is to have notes. So notes do a couple of things for me, and I almost never use them. Mostly, like, if I'm, you know, I've been in this fellowship for a while. I've been in 12-step recovery since I was 16 years old, and I'm 64. So if I'm sharing my recovery, you know, it comes pretty naturally without being rote, right? Because I'm my higher power is with me, right? So what needs to get said, needs to be said, you know, it'll be said. And if I screw up, I'll work the 10-step, right? For something like this, though, there's a particular theme, acceptance that I'm a compulsive. I say compulsive eater. I can eat compulsively without overeating. Like, I can overeat compulsively, and I can eat compulsively without overeating. And I can binge eat. Like, just do it all. And, you know, there are things that I don't want to wander too much. Like, I just want to, like, so I asked my higher power to guide me. I made some notes. I may stick to the notes. I may depart from the notes. But no matter what's happening, you know, my higher power is with me. And also the other thing, and the good thing about the the time cards being held up is I'm actually out there. One of the things I am out there in the world as a college professor, try to get us to shut up. But it's extraordinary to me that I've been asked to do this, and I'm also deeply, deeply, deeply grateful to have been asked to do it. Because it's a wonderful opportunity to be of service, you know, and that's what makes it go around, right? This is about love and service. Everything I say tonight is my experience, strength, and hope. I'm not speaking for OA as a whole. I'm not saying anything at all about the recovery of any other OA member. I'm just sharing pieces of my journey with you and what I've learned from them. I've been in the program since 2001. I was 40 years old when I came in, pushed in the door by a doctor who was concerned about my health. I was graced with abstinence and a good sponsor, and I had a number of years of relatively peaceful abstinence, and then, you know, through a series of events that I, you know, won't detail until, well, I won't detail them at all because who cares? But, okay, right, like the details are not the point. I don't mean who cares. Obviously, we share our experience, strength, and hope, and all of it's important, and there's a reason for all of it. It's just, like, not my main focus tonight. So for 2 or 3 years, I was not abstinent. I never went away from this program. I continued to come to meetings. You know, and read literature and talk with other people who are recovering compulsive eaters. I reconnected fully with this program, got a new sponsor, and started working the steps in November of 2010. And I'm grateful for my continuous abstinence since that time. I have a sponsor who I speak with weekly and text as needed, especially when I have a 10-step. I sponsor several people in this program, and I have a home group, which is Early Birds, 7:30 on Saturday mornings. Y'all are missing out. You have two choices. You can come see us at Messiah Episcopal in St. Paul, or you can join us online. Both great meetings. All right. So when I was thinking about this theme, I said, okay, acceptance that I am a compulsive eater means acceptance of what? Like, what are the things that require my acceptance if I'm going to go on in this program you know, beyond that realization. So there were five things that I decided I would, that I was inspired to bring forward tonight. And so those five things are powerlessness. Like what acceptance of what? Acceptance of powerlessness, unmanageability, what it means to have this condition, being a compulsive eater, acceptance of reality, and acceptance of my need for help. All right. So the first one, acceptance of powerlessness. What did that look like for me? So first of all, I already mentioned the doctor who said, you got to go do this thing. She didn't say gotta. I said, there's this health concern that I have for myself and that's in my family history. And there's this health concern that could be an issue for me and is in my family history. And I'm, you know, I have, you know, I'm concerned. And she was like, yeah, those things are a big deal. You need to address, you know, I like brought up my eating. She didn't say, well, obviously the problem is compulsive eating. Like I did bring it up. I said, you know, it's like, you know, a little bit about this is how I eat. And, you know, I know about these risks. And she said, yeah, essentially she said, you're going to make yourself sicker. Right. If you keep going the way you're going. She was very recovery savvy, this doctor, which awesome. And she said, I know you get a lot of value out of 12-step programs. And she reaches in a desk in her off, you know, in the exam room. It's like, here's an OA where and when. Here are a few meetings I've been told are good meetings. Okay. Thanks, doc. So I started coming to meetings. So that was the powerless. Okay. As soon as she, so I didn't need her to tell me that OA wasn't a good idea. I just needed her to kind of kick me in the butt about it. Right. So I've been around recovery a long time. I knew about OA, I knew people in happy recovery in OA. I had wrestled with myself many times about food, right, and the way I ate and the effects that the way I ate had on me. And so some of those things were the signs of my powerlessness. And these go back to my preteen and teen years. I don't remember particularly in, you know, my younger childhood food being a thing, but certainly by the time I was 12-ish, it had certainly become one, right? And so one of the things that I did in my sort of middle to early high school years was that I would go steal money from my father's wallet, and then I would ride my bike. We lived in a rural area a mile away from a village that was like 20 houses and a grocery store, like a little grocery shop with a couple of gas pumps out front. So, you know, I'm like, I want those sweet things, you know, and I know there are whole racks of those sweet things sitting at that little store, right? My dad, at the time that I was able to steal money from his wallet with impunity, was, and later, you know, like I'm not saying that this is what he was an alcoholic. That's where I'm trying to get. And I'm not saying that like I'm evaluating him. The you know, one of the joys for me and why I was able to get into 12-step program so early is that he got into recovery when I was 16, right? I was in the recovery for the rest of his, unfortunately not fair, he didn't live much longer after that, but we had a few years together with him in recovery, right? So he didn't know how much cash was in his wallet. He tended to carry a lot of cash. So I knew that, and if I went in, and if there was more than a couple of 20s, then I would take one. And my entire purpose in doing that was to go buy stuff to eat, right? And not only to buy stuff to eat, but to sneak into my room and to eat there. So I was stealing and sneaking when I was like 12, 13, 14 years old, all right? So that was a clear sign of my powerlessness. Years later, this looked a little different. I was in my, let's see, I was trying to think of where I live, what time period it was. It was the early to mid 90s. And I would my I wasn't stealing money from somebody's wallet, but I was spending, I didn't make a lot of money. And so I, money that needed to go to other things would sometimes get grabbed to go over here to go buy a bunch of that stuff at the store. Okay. And it was, there was a very, like, this happened over and over and over again where I would, I might be in my pajamas, you know, and I look at the time, I'm like, oh, the store where I know I can get that thing, that sweet thing usually closes in 15 minutes, right? I'm in for the night. I have my pajamas on. Nope. You know, leave my pajama shirt on, put some pants on. Go to the store, buy the thing. And buy the thing in quantities that, and in my brain, I've done this dozens and dozens of times, and still each time I'm telling myself, this will last for days. I'm buying 4 servings of this. It'll last for days. Didn't last for days, did it? Okay, so, you know, kind of, there are a couple of like really salient examples of my powerlessness. Another very common one for me was eating until I was uncomfortably full, right? And just like groaning and uncomfortable and, you know, and still feeling like I could eat more, right? Like not like my, I had the physical capacity to, but I knew I could still eat more. Sometimes wanted to, but that was very common for me. Another one was when I was, in my, more in my 20s again, and not making very much money, and I was also just generally very irresponsible with money. Another thing that I would do in my powerlessness when I like really wanted to try to satiate myself, which was like kind of not possible, was to manipulate friends into taking me out to eat, right? So that it got kind of practiced at that. And then there was like the lying to myself, you know, like the, you know, I just want to go out and have fun with friends and I can't afford it. So, you know, it's all right that I'm sort of nudging so-and-so a little bit to take me out, or, you know, I stole the money, but no, or yeah, I said it was 4 servings and turned out to be, you know, 1.5. But you know, so like just sort of writing off that I was lying to myself. That was another sign of my powerlessness. And then the most obvious one for me, which was I tried to stop and couldn't, right? I tried to eat in ways that better served my body, better served my health and well-being than the way I was eating. You know, tried to shift it on my own. Now, it's not like I could never do it for some period of time. And I wasn't a dieter. You know, I can only remember a couple of times that I tried sort of formal diets. But I would sometimes say, yeah, I just need to eat less, right? And that's fine. I'll be fine if I eat less. And so sometimes there was a period of time where I ate less, right? And it could be, you know, a couple of days or a couple of weeks or a couple of months. But the inevitable progression was back to eating till I was too full, going out at night to get those certain kinds of foods, et cetera, lying to myself and all the rest. So when I talk about acceptance that I'm a compulsive overeater, that's part of it. Accepting that I'm powerless and you know, taking a genuine look, you know, an honest look at, okay, what are the signs of my powerlessness? So those are some of mine. All right. Accepting the unmanageability that came from my compulsive eating. Now, already talked about the doctor, already talked about there were health risks, right? I knew the health risks. I knew the impact that the way I was eating would have on them, and I continued to eat in that way, right? It's not like it was some kind of mystery to me that I had these elevated risks. You know, I knew that. And it didn't have any lasting impact on my behavior, right? And so I already had some health issues that were destined to get worse, right, was my doctor's point, that were destined to get worse if I continued eating the way I was. The unmanageability was, right, a sign of my unmanageability was the things that were happening with my health that were directly related to how I was eating, to what compulsive eating, did the effects that it had on my body. There were also the effects that it had in my relationships and especially in my marriage. I have a lovely marriage. My wife and I have been together for 30 years now. I'm very, very, very blessed in that part of my life. And when I was compulsively eating, is another thing about unmanageability is how I think about myself, right? It's like how I, in my mind's eye, what I look like and what I say about that. You know, that I, what I say about my body weight, my body shape, my body size, my body fat, right? Round and round and round. Like, not those messages didn't start here, right? But we get bombarded with these messages and I internalize them, right? And and then they just helped keep my compulsive eating in place. But the because of all that going on, right? The like my how I felt about my body was a barrier to intimacy and sex in my marriage, right? So that was another way that unmanageability played out. I already talked about when I was younger and not so great with money, that about manipulating friends, but that showed up in other ways too. My unmanageability showed up in that too, primarily in, spending on binge food, right? When they're like, you got to put gas in the car to get to work, right? It's like, that's how marginal my financial life was sometimes. So causing myself increased financial stress because of, feeding this compulsive eating. I want to talk about shame as a form of unmanageability, right? That, because of, I just had all this going, and here's the thing, right? It's like, I love the, the credits don't transfer, right? I've been in 12-step program since I was 16, right? There wasn't any applying what I learned from multiple other 12-step programs to this until I got here, right? So I knew, what lack of control looks like. And I knew that lack of control is a sign of this condition of compulsive, or, of whatever compulsive condition it is. And that's not a matter of, there's not a moral judgment there. It's a reality. That's how this works. That's how compulsive illness works. And yet I was sunk in shame about my compulsive eating and about the impact that it had on my life and the impact that it had on other people. So I think that's part of, for me, that was part of the unmanageability. What else do I want to say about that? Oh, and the shame, again, like all that stuff in my head about my body size and shape and so on. I think, I had to get here to be clear that that was a feature of being a compulsive eater rather than a feature of how my body actually looked and felt, right? Because there are all kinds of things we can do to change how our bodies look and feel, and that the shame well can be just as deep, right? Being, lighter, being fitter, like whatever it might be, that doesn't change the shame, right? The shame isn't about that, right? So shame, I think, is key for me when I think of unmanageability. All right. So acceptance that I'm a compulsive eater, what do I need to accept in terms of having this condition and what it means that I have it? So one thing it means for me is that when it comes to food and eating, I'm different from most people and I always will be, right? That have to like have that, there's, in our mother program, it talks about we had to concede to our innermost selves, right? And so conceding to my innermost self, this is how this works. Once you get to this point, right? Once you get to a certain point, and I don't know, like there's no like stark line that I crossed, like it just moved deeper and just moved deeper and deeper into this thing, right? So that was headed somewhere. Oh, right. So, you know, at some point, I reached that part of this journey where there's no going back. Where was that? I don't know. Who cares? I'm here now, right? I am a compulsive eater. That's, you know, a true thing about me. So, yeah. So that's one of the things about having this condition that I need to bring acceptance to. Right? I am, as a compulsive eater, I'll always have the like basic machinery of a compulsive eater. And if I engage with food in ways that don't work, then I'm going to be eating compulsively sooner or later. Right? That's never going to change. I don't have to eat compulsively, which wild, right? But I do need to know that the reality that I have this condition of compulsive eating will never change. All right. And that, from there, another thing that's true for me about having this condition is that there are certain things that don't work and never will. Right? So that's a number of things for me. So we talk about abstaining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. I have engaged in both binge eating of certain foods and overeating on just about anything, right? You know, at certain times in my life, I didn't even have to like the way it tasted, right? To eat too much of it. It was just the eating of it, the stuffing, right? That was the, what felt like the need of the moment. It doesn't work for me to binge eat, and to remain free of binge eating, there are foods that I have to stay away from. In an interesting whatever, I don't know that coincidence probably isn't the right word, but in an interesting confluence, I also have an easily managed but important chronic medical condition that requires that I eat a certain way and pretty much cuts out all those binge foods, right? So I've really had a double benefit of eating a way that works for my body, that it nurtures my recovery and it keeps me free of the symptoms of this chronic illness. So that's pretty awesome. But there are certain things that don't work, eating the foods that I binge on if I eat them, overeating anything, right? And so those are the main ones. But you know, they're just like various other things that any of us might have. But you know, there are things that I know they don't work, and there's not some magic point in the future in which they will. And by work, I mean I'd be able to engage with them without causing myself problems. That's not going to happen. All right. What else do I need to accept as part of having this condition? So I would say, kind of playing off that last one, there isn't a risk-free way for me to engage in those compulsive eating, those eating and food behaviors that I know don't work, right? It's not like, well, a little bit, right? That's not how this works for me. And likewise, there isn't a, well, that wasn't that bad, right? So when I said I'd been in the program for several years, then I had about 3 years that I was eating compulsively and then fully returned to this program. And when I returned to compulsive eating, like when I re-engaged with food in ways that really don't work, there were things there was like out there as like the worst things, okay? And for a while I wasn't doing the worst things, right? But I was doing things that didn't work. I was doing things I hadn't done in years, because they weren't abstinent behaviors for me, right? But guess what? I got to the point of doing the so-called worst things, because it isn't really about which things. It's really about being a compulsive eater. And if I'm compulsively eating, then I'm compulsively eating, and powerlessness and manageability are the things that are running the show. And fear. Ugh. All right. And then the other thing about this condition that I will mention, that about this condition that I have to accept, is self-knowledge isn't enough. And I am well stocked with self-knowledge. I got your self-knowledge. I'm 64 years old. I've been doing life for a while. I've had many, many experiences that have, pushed me to grow up, sometimes against my will. Right? And many fantastic, I'm a parent, so that grows you up in a hurry, right? But I have been able, I have matured, that which is amazing, because I matured very slowly in my life, like really, really slowly. I think I was probably a grown-up about the time I hit 50, and there are still days when I say, how would a grown-up handle this? I've had many opportunities to get to know myself really well. I knew myself fairly well at 40, but that didn't do anything to stop my compulsive eating. It does give me some, like we have tools in this program, and it's like, oh, I can, like, yeah, I know myself. I see these tools. I can see how I can apply them to me. Okay. But that's not enough. It's not enough, and for me, it's never going to be enough to have. To have self-knowledge alone and have that bring, recovery and joyful abstinence and a spiritual center into my life. All right. So, as I'm learning to accept that I'm a compulsive eater, I've talked about powerlessness, unmanageability, and sort of the implications of having this condition called compulsive eating. I also just, I think everything I've said, a really brief way of saying it is that I have to accept reality, right? The reality is, this is how it is. I'm a compulsive eater, and for me, that means a whole bunch of stuff I just told you. A whole bunch of things that I can't do without engaging with food, without engaging in them compulsively. Right? And things, like self-knowledge is not enough. And that's key, like accepting reality is key. Like this really is how it is. There's no moving forward until I've done that, right? If I don't know where I'm positioned, I can't move forward from that position, right? I can't, like I'm here, and so if I want to end up there, I know what I, sorry, use the mic. I know what I have to do to get there, right? But if I'm saying no, if I'm denying reality, saying then I don't have the ground under me, and I can't move forward. I went to a convention, I don't even know how many years ago, where the speaker said, I have found that in my life, pain comes not from change, but from resistance to change. I was like, you're talking to me? Like, this is a room full of people, but you're clearly talking to me. Okay? I think that fully accepting reality as reality is the essence of surrender. It's like, yeah, this is really how it is. I'm not going to change that. I'm not going to shift that, right? There may be nothing or next to nothing I can do on my own about that, right? Okay. I don't have to love that, right? I don't have to like it. You know, it becomes okay over time, right? I'm a compulsive eater. You know what? That's okay. Because there's a way to live free of compulsive eating, even though I'm a compulsive eater. But, you know, that acceptance of reality as reality, you know, brings me to a place of surrender. And surrender to reality just takes me to the last thing that it's essential that I accept, and that is that I need help. I already said self-knowledge doesn't get it done. I already said I made lots of attempts to try to control it on my own. None of them worked, right? And for me, it means I need a certain kind of help, right? Which I knew when I got here that I needed. You know, that this, for me, recovery means connecting with a spiritual core, moving along a spiritual path, having a higher power in my life who does not need me to define it, and mostly I don't. But I'll tell you what, it's here because you are, right? All of you and me collectively, that's my higher power, like, glowing, okay? But the point is, I've amply shown that I can't do this alone. And so, I need help. Pretty straightforward. And I was very fortunate that I learned in my teens that spirituality was essential for me. And that's... that has served me so well over time. And it's not because, it's not that like I never had struggles. It's not like I've never had struggles with acceptance. I've never had struggles with surrender. I've never had struggles with trying to understand my higher power. Like, all of those things have happened and more. But the steps give me like a few very clear pieces of information about a power greater than myself, right? That it can restore me to sanity. That it's loving, right? That I can make conscious contact with it through prayer and meditation and various spiritual practices in my life, right? That I can, you know, turn myself over to it fully, including all the things that I don't like about myself or that are not serving me and are harming me and other people, right? And that's great. Got what I need. I still need to do all whatever spiritual exploration I want. Great. But right there in the steps, it tells me the fundamentals that I need to know about my higher power. When I came back to this program, I didn't leave. But when I recommitted to recovery in 2010, the person I went to sponsor me was a person who talked steps all the time. I was like, yes. Yes, that's where it happens. So I went to that person, will you sponsor me? Yes, you know, a week and a half later, I was doing a fourth step, right? It's just like, let's move through it. And we did. We didn't cut any corners, but we kept moving through the steps, right? I did the work. I didn't do it alone, and I did the work. So, you know, I love that we have this, you know, this three-legged stool in the program, that we have the steps, the fellowship, and the tools. I deeply love fellowship. Deeply love fellowship. I don't know what I'd do without you. And I appreciate the tools and all the ways in which I've used them and what they make possible. What is most fundamental to me is the steps. And I live my life today in steps 10, 11, and 12. My higher power directs me little further back than that. That's great. You know, it's, if I'm not willing to go in the moment,
okay.
But, you know, there will be more things to inspire willingness as I go along. But yeah, I get to live in steps 10, 11, and 12 today. And that's like, it's kind of, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time focused on it. But when I do kind of stop, like I am like in the moment right now, stop and think about the fact that there's not a lot of interpersonal drama in my life, right? And you know what's one of the big factors in that? I don't cause it. what I do when I get crabby with my beloved spouse? You know what I do about that? I clean it up, right? And I say a prayer, and I send my sponsor a 10th step. I make amends. I change my behavior with my higher power's help, right? And if I do it 5 times a day, then I need to do it 5 times a day, right? If I engage in that snappiness 5 times, I need to do that 10th step 5 times. But you know what I do every day? Like, I do a nightly review as well. I send the email off to my sponsor. And whenever I do that nightly review, and in general, I mean, it's not like life isn't, you know, like, stuff happens in my life. Like, for years we had, you know, our son had really, really rough struggles. He's a person with multiple special needs, and, you know, it's like, went through some really rough times, and which put us through some really rough times. I don't mean that like my I have a floaty kind of life. I don't mean I have a like I'm just gonna sit here on a cloud peacefully kind of life. What I mean is that I don't have to like keep carrying my old nonsense into the new day and causing more harm with it, right? It can be done. There's still all of life to live, all of life to deal with, all the hard stuff, right? Plenty of hard stuff. You know, there's a situation at work I'm grappling with right now, and this is pretty challenging, right? Thanksgiving will be the 10th anniversary of my brother's death. You know, it's kind of a big anniversary to have come around. You know, that I feel that one, right? So there's still all the real life stuff, but there's real life that I get to live with these steps in my pocket. Why? Because I said, here's what's real. I'm accepting that I'm a compulsive eater. I'm accepting that I'm powerless. I'm accepting that that my compulsive eating makes my life unmanageable. I'm accepting like what compulsive eating is. I'm accepting the reality that that's true about me, and so I'm accepting help. And so I get to have not a life that's pain-free, but a life where I'm not, like, causing a bunch of pain, right? And a life where when I'm experiencing pain, I don't have to eat in some misguided attempt to make it go away, and I have you to talk to. Right? Or to connect with, however, right? Talking to you is talking to my higher power. And I have many other ways to talk to my higher power as well. To talk or to be still or like whatever's there. To have that ground under me again. I think human beings, one of the things that I just love about this program. So, you know, I've often heard it said across many programs that this is about love and service. I think that's perfect. I think that like we, whether I'm talking compulsive eaters or human beings, I think we thrive when we're connected to each other and when we have purpose. Well, what is this? This program is a program of love and service. I just said the same thing twice. Love and service, connection and purpose, right? But I have that because I have you. You brought me these steps. You brought me things like sponsorship, you know, service commitments, and so on, right? You brought me the literature. You brought me the tools. I can access you any time of the day or night, especially now, right? I can, you know, it's like, if I have my phone, I have a meeting, right? That's the 21st century reality. And you know, another thing I have now is, because I've been doing all this for a while, like, I also have the faith born of experience, right? Oh, I've been, you know, for close to subtract 14 years now, I've been, you know, living this way of life consistently, you know, integrated into my day, integrated into who I am. And I, you know, I don't need to eat compulsively. I get to have a certain kind of life, and I get to be, I have all these opportunities for love and service, right? I think that's it. I'll keep coming back. Thank you so much for asking me to do this.